As you may recall, we're going through the colors that are in the back of Merging with Shiva, reminding ourselves of some of the subtleties. Started with red, then we did yellow, and today we're up to green. Green is a peculiar group, consisting, as of course it does, of various combinations of blues and yellows, tinted and shaded by white or black. Even skilled occultists find it very difficult to account for the fact of certain green shades arising from the spiritual blue and the intellectual yellow. This is one of the most obscure points in the whole subject of the astral colors. And none but the most advanced occultists are able to explain the why in some instances. To those who are fond of analysis of this kind, I will drop the following hint, which may help them out in the matter. The key is found in the fact that green lies in the center of the astral spectrum and is a balance between the two extremes and is also influenced by these two extremes in a startling manner. A certain restful green denotes love of nature, outdoor life, travel in the country, etc., and also slightly differing in tint, the love of home, scenes, etc. Again, the clear, beautiful, lighter tint of green indicates what may be called sympathy, altruistic emotion, charity, etc. Again, illustrating variety in this group of astral colors, another shade of green shows intellectual tolerance of the views of others. Growing duller, this indicates tact, diplomacy, ability to handle human nature, and descending another degree or so blends into insincerity, shiftiness, untruth, etc. There is an ugly slate-colored green indicating low, tricky deceit. This is a very common shade in the colors of the average aura, I am sorry to say. Finally, a particularly ugly, muddy, murky green indicates jealousy and kindred feelings, envious malice, etc. I like the lighter ones myself. We're definitely in the world of, time of blogs, and one of the emails that I received from one of the monks was pointing out that this man, a non-Hindu, was commenting on Panchaganapati on his blog. So I thought I'd read from that. First, I'd read the first day of Panchaganapati from Gurudeva's description, then read how he responded to that. I thought it was interesting. The family sadhana for the first day of Panchaganapati is to create a vibration of love and harmony among immediate family members. The day begins early, and the entire family works together to design and decorate the shrine with traditional symbols, rangoli, lamps, and more. Then a grand puja is performed, invoking the spirit of Panchaganapati in the home. The sadhana of the day now begins. The family sits together for the purpose of easing any strained relationships that have arisen during the year. They make amends one with another for misdeeds performed, insults given, mental pain and injuries caused and suffered. When forgiveness is offered to all by one and all, they speak of another's good qualities and resolve that in the days ahead they will remember the futility of trying to change others and the practicality of changing oneself to be the silent example for all to witness. Gifts are then exchanged and placed unopened before Panchaganapati. As family harmony is important to all Hindus, this sadhana must be taken very seriously. Then we get the blog. My family is rather disjointed, he says. I have disagreements with my dad over the way things are done, and with my mother over how she sees the world and the people in it. I don't care for some of the decisions my brothers have made, and I'm still waiting for my sister to come home and grow a spine. So this is a good day to consider the good points they all have. My father's quest for tranquility and harmony in the home, my mother's quest for knowledge and wisdom. My brothers have their good qualities. One does what he can to preserve his own family, while the other seeks a better relationship with God. My sister is amazingly intelligent and has always pursued learning and scientific exploration. All of these people have had moments of stress with me over the past year. My job today is to forgive and forget, drop the old issues that make me cranky, and try to see where I can improve myself to enhance those relationships. While it's not convenient to sit and talk about transgressions this way, not to mention that we're all Western bred, the unfortunate quality of self-defensiveness prevalent in our behaviors, it is always convenient to reassess myself in the light of what these people offer and recognize what I can do to make things better between us. Isn't that nice? And I thought he caught the spirit quite nicely just from the literature. So what came to my mind is the glass is half full. So rather than half empty, of course we know that means we're looking at the positive aspect of the situation rather than the negative one. So I think the same thing applies to people. I don't know if we could say the person is half full, or have to give that some thought, but the idea is there. You know, we tend to see the negative in people and ignore the positive more than we should. Just as the same as we see the negative in a situation rather than the positive. So I think the idea of the first day of Panchaganapati is to look a little harder into the other people we know and recognize their good qualities, which we take for granted, and let go of some of the criticism of the qualities we don't like that much, and recognize the ones that are there and how productive they are, and to the family or to the monastery in the case of monks, and by seeing the person in that way. Gurudeva used to point out it's a matter of habit that we develop over time, our initial reaction to a situation. And that habit may change at some point in our life. For example, it could change during our teenage years. That's a major time of change. And before then, we may have been more positive than after then. Somehow, situations in life, our parents, hearing them react a certain way over and over, can change our natural reaction. But it's good to watch and see when you're faced with a challenging situation, also known as a problem, a challenging situation that you're not sure you can handle, or definitely you can't handle easily, what's your reaction? Are you negative? Do you think you might not do it successfully, or are you positive? You think that, this is going to be a little challenging, but I'm sure I can do it. So if it's negative, it can be changed. That's the point. No one has to be a negative person. It's something, we're not born that way. You know, something we pick up at some point in life if we do have that habit, and we can change it. How do we change it? Well, first we have to see it. That's why Radeva says, observation is the first awakening of the soul. If we don't have observation, we can't make much progress. Observation comes from refraining from excessive talk. And if excessive talk, of course, means excessive, doesn't mean any and all. Society, social situations require that we talk, but if we talk excessively, we're lessening our ability to observe ourselves. And a lesser ability to observe ourselves means we won't see those qualities in us clearly that we could change and improve. So through observation, we can identify the quality that we would like to change, and then we can, through Gurudeva's teachings, figure out a way to change it. Vasana Da Tantra can work if it's related to specific incidents in the past in our life or in lives of our family members that we're holding on to. We can let go of those. Affirmation can help, power of affirmation, choosing an affirmation which builds confidence. It's an important quality for those who are raising children or influencing grandchildren to watch in the children, to see if when challenged they react positively or negatively. And if you see some negativity, you need to work with the child to overcome it, because it can be overcome. Example we use in the write-up on the 9 qualities to develop in children. One is called profound self-confidence, I think it is. It's a profound self-confidence. Positive self-concept, profound self-confidence. Yes, profound self-confidence can be built in a child. And the example is teaching carpentry. So if a father systematically, over a 10-15-year period, teaches carpentry skills to a son, you know, if he knows that, for example, and gradually gives more and more difficult tasks to do, then that's a way of building self-confidence in a child in a systematic way. You give something a little more difficult, systematically over time, and that builds confidence. Likewise, children need to be monitored at school for things that didn't go well. The classic one is getting up in front of the class to give a talk and doing poorly, right? Then we never want to get up in front of a class again and give a talk. So if that happens, we have to know it happened. You know, the parent has to be close enough to the child to know something's wrong when the child comes home and to get the child to explain. And then in that case, you could have the child practice at home, giving talks to you, and practice somewhere else and get a positive concept in the mind, a few of them, to offset the negative concept. Well, that's the idea there, that confidence is something that can be built. And likewise, if we find we react negatively to challenging situations, that can be changed as well. We just have to be observant enough of ourselves and of children to see the qualities in the first place. So, thank you very much.